Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call to order the Senate Committee on Judiciary. What I'm going to do first is I'm going to call up, this is in regards to Senate Bill 923, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the people that have scheduled to give testimony on this to come forward. I want to put some stuff on the record. The bill itself is not going to be moving forward, but I do want to make certain that we have a working relationship with the Department of Justice and their proponents of the bill. So Margaret Only, Marnell Shankle, Greg Warnkoff, and Jesse, I don't know if you want to come up or not. I want to put this on the record because I want to make sure we all are on the same page. I understand there's been at least perception that the Department of Justice has not been willing to work as closely with the proponents as they say they would like for you to be working on. I know that I've looked at some of the data or some of the, emails and correspondence that's taken place. So what I'd like for you all to do is limit your comments as to where we stand today and what's going to happen in the future as to working together to address the issues that the proponents of 923 have brought forward. So I'll let DOJ go first.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. Margaret Only, Special Counsel to Attorney General John Kroger. On the issue of veterans receiving credit for child support arrears that have accrued when a benefit has gone directly to the custodial parent, this is an issue that came before us when I first started, and we have already drafted an administrative rule to address the concern. We currently have a rule that allows that credit, dollar-for-dollar credit. The concern has been that dating back to 1995, apparently, there are some arrears that had accrued for which this credit had not been given, and do we have a process for ensuring that if a veteran can prove that a custodial parent had received benefits on behalf of a child directly, that they get credit for that? We have drafted a rule to eliminate any kind of two-year limitation on making such a claim. That rule would be, our anticipation is that that's going to go through our regular quarterly rulemaking to go into effect in July. We will also be working with the Department of Veterans Affairs to do outreach so that veterans know about this right. And we will then work with a veteran. Their arrearage will be eliminated, and to the extent there's any question about their credit, we would also work with, and it's current practice, we write a letter that the obligor can use with creditors to say that there is not a problem, explaining what the status is. So those are all already in process that we intend to do.
All right.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, for the record, Ronell Shankle, at A.G. Kroger's direction and with Margaret's counsel, I have been working behind the scenes on the technical issues. My point of contact at the Department of Veterans Affairs, is Tom Mann, and we are going to work on outreach, and then I'm also working with the Division of Child Support Field Operations to implement the things Margaret spoke to, so that is ongoing work behind the scenes. We're happy to share any of that information with Oregon War Veterans Association.
All right, thank you. And Greg, as I mentioned to you before the hearing started, it's not my intention to move the bill forward at this point. I believe if this can be done through administrative rule, it's a better way, it's a quicker way, and it allows for more flexibility in sticking something in the statute that then has to come back and be fixed. So I understand your frustrations that you've expressed to me, but I feel at this point that department is moving forward based on their testimony today that's on the record. And what I'm going to ask you to do is if they are not playing fair, they're not working with you, to get back directly with me so I can have another conversation. Is there anything else that you wanted to share at this moment?
Yes, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, Greg Warnock, Oregon War Veterans Association. For the record, I would like to state that our advocacy is for approximately 700 combat-related, 100% disabled veterans who we feel have been completely abused over the years for decades on the child support issue. In 2003, we fixed part of that. We had to, however, by legislative action, force DOJ to do that. They would not ask, they would not comply with our requests at that time. Since the new AG has taken over, I have to admit he has been very supportive on this issue, personally supportive of this issue. And we gave two stipulations to DOJ in order to not bring this as a statutory solution. One of them was to come up with an administrative rule that would be sufficient to solve the problem. And two would be to have a first meeting with the Department of Veterans Affairs. Yesterday, late in the afternoon, I got a copy of the administrative rule proposal. And DOJ and ODVA have still not met. So the two conditions that I had not yet been met before we scheduled this hearing.
All right. I appreciate that. I guess I would say with John Kroger as the new sheriff in the state, let's let him do his work. It sounds like there's a good faith effort on their part.
I think so, yes.
And if that doesn't happen, come back and talk to me, and we'll have an opportunity to redress this, even if it's after session.
Please keep in mind, I'm sorry, that we understand that we agree to the solution, but whether or not it's a statutory solution for a permanent fix or an administrative rule solution where, by the way, the rules could be changed at any point by another AG, for example. The past AG was not supportive. This AG is. Statutory solution does appear to be the permanent way to fix this problem, although we both all agree that the prepared solution through the administrative rule could solve the problem.
All right. Thank you very much for coming to the table. Thank you for putting this on the record. All right. Now I'm going to go ahead and go into a work session since Council Taylor has only one other bill before us today. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 310.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 310 comes to you from the ACLU of Oregon. The dash for amendments you have before you are replace the bill. Requires a law enforcement agency in an aggravated murder, manslaughter 1 and 2, criminally negligent homicide, aggravated vehicular homicide, and sex crimes to preserve biological evidence in an amount sufficient to develop a DNA profile. Does not require the physical evidence to preserve if the evidence is such a size as to make retention impractical. Bill sunsets on January 2, 2012. Chair, members of the committee, it has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. And, Mr. Chair, my notes show that we adopted the dash 4 amendments. I believe we would have to recede from that and replace with the dash 4.
I think you said the dash 2.
Dash 2, excuse me.
Right.
The 2s are coming out, 4s are going in.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move that we remove the dash 2 amendments from SB 310 and replace them with the dash 4 amendments.
All right. Senator Boquist makes a motion that we remove the dash 2s from Senate Bill 310 that were adopted previously by this committee and based on rescinding them and then replace them with the dash 4 amendments that we just heard from Council. Is there any discussion? Let me just put on the record what we're attempting to do here is we're trying to maintain that any evidence that would fit within the criteria of this bill would be retained over a period of time of just over 2 years that would, in fact, allow for the interested parties to be meeting during the interim to determine on what steps the state will be taking for preserving DNA evidence in the future. This will hopefully give us an opportunity to have a very open, broad discussion on this matter and will, in fact, allow us to come back in either in the February session of this next year or the following regular session in 2011 to address the issue on a long-term basis, but having all the players at the table to have input before we get there. Any other questions or comments? Any objections to the motion? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is there's no revenue and minimal fiscal impact. Therefore, I move SB 310 with the dash 4 to the floor with the two passes.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 310 as amended by the dash 4 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Wissett.
Question, Chair. Do we have a sign off on the small agencies, the small towns and so forth, that there won't be the storage of this DNA will not be a problem for them?
Yeah, what we have is there's actually a provision that for let's see, this one, the offices of five sworn officers or less are not included in here. So the very small ones are not. I don't.
That's a different bill.
Is that a different one? Okay, well, I was getting a handshake, so I thought that was right. Okay, that's a different bill.
Sure, that's the bill tomorrow, 309.
That's another one. Okay,
one number
sorry.
Off.
One number off. All right. As far as I know, we have not heard anything back from small law enforcement agencies at this point. Other questions?
So the minimal fiscal, does that, the minimal fiscal includes in the small, I mean, that's what my concern all along, and I don't know that's been addressed.
I would say probably not, but I guess in the perspective we're talking about, whatever evidence they've retained, whatever they have taken in, basically there's a moratorium of destroying that evidence for a two-year period. I would assume that this type of cases are not going to see that type of evidence destroyed anyway during this period of time. All right, any other questions? Any objection? So order, and Senator Dingfelder has volunteered to carry this one.
What's bad is coming.
I actually understand.
All right, and the chair will be back up on this one just in case. All right, so that closes out 310. And what I do want to put on, we have a couple other bills that are set for work session. They were scheduled for today, but should have been carried over till tomorrow. So those who may be in the room with regarding Senate Bill 253.
They should be carried over till Friday. That's what 809.
And Senate Bill 289. My understanding is they will be carried over until this coming Friday, which would be the 24th. To catch up with Senate Bill 309. Again, we're putting on the record, the intent is to take those two bills and incorporate them into
809.
Into 809.
That's right. They're not mine. That's right.
809.
Is that right?
I don't think 809 is right.
That's
908. 308. 309. That's what I had. That's what I had down the
sorry,
first time.
They're not my bills.
All right, councils, really giving me. See, when we start at 9
they
o'clock, it's 8 o'clock. All right, so they're being carried over to be...
they're being carried over then. Now I should be sure to say. I don't know what date.
And so I'm going to say this. They're going to be carried over, and instead of saying to Friday, I'm going to say tomorrow, just to make sure, because I thought 309 was up actually for Thursday, not Friday. It is? All right, so 253 and 289 are carried over until tomorrow, Thursday, April 23rd. Okay. And they will catch up with 309. And then the other one that I've been told, is Senate Bill 10, is not ready to go. That's being carried over till tomorrow. So 310 is carried over till April 23rd. And then I also understand that Senate Bill 797, the paperwork has not caught up with us, and it will not be ready until Monday.
Monday.
So Monday, April 27th. So, now what we're going to do is go ahead and open up a public hearing. I'm going to open up a public hearing on the two bills at the top of the agenda, Senate Bill 303 and Senate Bill 810. And the reason I'm doing that is everyone that is on Senate Bill 303 are on 810 with the exception of Philip Kennedy Wong, who's only on 810, and we'll let him come up if he needs to toward the end. And so... Why don't you give us kind of an overview of 303 and 810.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 303, as nonprofit animal care agency that has maintained an investigation department for 5 years and has had officers commissioned as special agents by the governor to the definition of law enforcement unit, clarifies that training from the DPSST will be paid for by the animal care agency. Senate Bill 810 transfers duty to obtain search warrants and enter premises to investigate animal abuse from peace officers to police officers and declares an emergency effective on passage. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let everyone know it's about 9:20. We have about 25 minutes thereabouts to take in the testimony today on these bills. And so people will need to, limit their testimony accordingly. And at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and call up Bonnie Helzer and... Sharon Herman and... Councilwoman Lawrence.
It's like Harmon.
What's that?
Harmon.
It looks like an E, but I think it is Harmon. So the way we've opened up the hearing, if you have testimony on either of the two bills, feel free to give us that testimony now. And if you want to distinguish between which one you're talking about, for the record, that would be great. And whoever wants to start, just give us your name, and we'll go from there.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, my name is Sharon Harmon. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Humane Society. We are a local private organization dedicated to the welfare of animals across the state. We were established in 1868. And for a point of clarity, we are not affiliated with any local or national organization. We're not under anyone else's governing board. We are strictly an Oregon organization, an entity unto itself. We're here today to ask you for your support for Senate Bill 303-1 amendments. I'm not sure how the text of 303 came to be. Sometimes legislative council is a mystery to me. What we really want is the dash one amendment. It's a gut and stuff of 303. I'm so sorry to have troubled you with this. It's confusing enough. 303-1, has everybody got their amendment? It's a simple change that just simply allows DPSST to create rules that govern post-graduation certification. A little history: the Oregon Humane Society employs special agents commissioned by the governor of Oregon to enforce the animal cruelty laws of the state. That's our commission is restricted to the animal cruelty laws. Our powers are under the governor's commission are as peace officers. That's an important point as we go forward. And the animal cruelty laws are pretty narrowly defined. Livestock practices are exempt, rodeos are exempt, research laboratories are exempt. We're really talking about animal abuse and neglect as commonly understood by the general public. And those are the laws that we are empowered to enforce, and those are the laws we wish to continue to enforce under our commission. Senate Bill 303-1 simply enables DPSST to create post-graduation certification rules. Currently, once our officers who are required to go through the full academy, along with sheriff and local police, we pay our own way, we graduate, but there's no provision to continue that certification. So what that results in is we, as special agents, are out there enforcing the law without continuing certification. And as a public policy, it seems like the best way to do it is to roll special agents under DPSST's authority for continuing certification and ongoing training and accreditation and accountability. It's probably not often that a private entity comes to you and says, we want to be regulated, and I bet it never happens that we come and say, we want to be regulated and we will pay for it. This shifts all of the costs, as they have been. This puts it in statute that all the costs for the certification and training will be paid for by the Oregon Humane Society. We're not a state agency. We're privately funded, and this should be revenue and expense neutral. Perhaps revenue positive. You never know how it all works out. We are often in a position to assist local law enforcement. We never affect an investigation or issue a search warrant without the collaboration and cooperation of local law enforcement. We are partners. We don't come in without anyone knowing we're there. We couldn't do our job with local law enforcement, and I would counter that local law enforcement could not do their job with respect to animal crimes without the resources of the Oregon Humane Society's shelter, medical services, forensic laboratory, and special agents as cruelty investigators. This bill does not grant new authority, doesn't expand authority, doesn't give us license to look into areas that are already exempt from law. It simply creates a process for ongoing certification. It doesn't do anything more than that. There's a lot of misinformation out there. A lot of misinformation about who we are, what we do. Are we connected with PETA? Are we connected with these rattle animal rights groups? We're the Oregon Humane Society. We're a modern animal welfare organization that's been here since 1868, founded on doing cruelty work. Started with horses, moved to kids, we're back to dogs and cats. We just want to continue doing the good job we've done to the state, for the state of Oregon, with a little more rulemaking and process. Thank you.
Thank you. Whoever wants to go next. Either one.
It's too nice down here. For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I manage the standards and certification program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. And obviously, the policy discussions are not for DPSST to enter into, but I do want to clarify, because this legislation makes a small change to DPSST's enabling statutes. As has been already identified, the Dash 1 amendments to this bill would make specific humane investigation agencies, law enforcement units, for purposes of DPSST statutes only. Currently, specific individuals who have been employed by these entities, and this currently applies to both entities of the Oregon Humane Society and the Redmond Humane Society that meet the definition, are currently commissioned by the governor and attend the full DPSST Basic Police Academy. Before they come to DPSST, anybody who attends is required to meet all of the minimum standards, both physical and criminal background. And these entities, by virtue of their agreement and their commission with the governor's office, do pay for all of their own training. But because they are not defined as police officers within DPSST statutes, they are not eligible to obtain certification after meeting all of the minimum standards, or to retain their certification if they have come to either of these investigation agencies as currently certified police officers. And likewise, they are not subject to maintenance training requirements and are not subject to DPSST's professional standards enforcement by virtue of denial or revocation. DPSST's definition of a police officer, you'd find on page 4 of the Dash 1 amendments, has two relevant elements. One of them is that they must work full-time as a police as a peace officer for a law enforcement unit. And the second element is that they must be commissioned by one of the listed entities there in the definition. Senate Bill 303, as amended by the Dash 1s, makes the Humane Investigation Agency's law enforcement units for DPSST purposes only. It does not change the commissioning entities, so it does not grant these entities the authority to commission the peace officers. That continues to reside with the governor's office. But because these entities, by virtue of this amendment, would be employed by a law enforcement unit, if they were also then commissioned by the governor, they would be defined as police officers for DPSST purposes, eligible for certification, subject to our agency's minimum standards. And because, as has been identified, current practice is that these entities pay for their training, and because our standards and certification staff currently does all of the background investigation to ensure that they meet the minimum standards, this should be fiscal neutral for DPSST. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Let me go ahead and get the last of the testimony, then we'll open up for questions. So Bonnie.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bonnie Helzer. I am a special agent for the Oregon Humane Society. I was certified as a full-time police officer in 2001 and did do full-time police work for 6 years. I've also been an investigator for the Department of Justice, and I now find myself happily at the Oregon Humane Society. My testimony today is in support of Senate Bill 303. Certification guarantees that the Oregon Humane Society has undertaken important steps so that the institutions and the agents' performance comply with the standards accepted by the law enforcement community and is therefore also recognized statewide. With certification, the actions of a special agent will be held to standards of efficiency, effectiveness, honesty, and legality, and
and with certification, if an agent's actions do not meet these standards, the necessary corrective and preventive measures can be taken with the process in place for periodic review with DPSST. Though Oregon Humane Society, the Oregon Humane Society is a private organization, as special agents, we are law enforcement professionals who hold ourselves to the same high standards as our fellow police officers, deputies, and troopers. We work with many law enforcement agencies to supplement and bolster their resources. However, we are often the ones leading the investigations with the other law enforcement supporting us. I believe that it is important for us to be held to the same standards of training and professionalism as these other law enforcement entities. And additionally, the citizens of Oregon should be assured that our special agents are held to this high standard.
All right, thank you. I'm going to open up the panel for any questions. Senator Westsett.
Ms. Dean, you put together Senate Bill 303, Senate Bill 810, and House Bill 2977, and we create a policy question: should the state create a private law enforcement agency with search warrant authority to enforce animal cruelty laws? When you put them all together, that's where we're going. So I think that is that the intent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, it's not the intent to create, it's the intent to clarify. We've been doing this for a very long time, and I agree it is an unusual relationship for Oregon. It's not unusual for California, New York, Massachusetts, who have in statute specified humane agents, special agents, California humane agents. Oregon has done it differently through a commission through the governor's office. We've had no problems in the years we've been doing this. We are professionals. We receive the same training that other law enforcement do, and I think we serve the state in a unique capacity. I would love to see the state of Oregon put up the resources to adequately address citizens' complaints, but we all know that animal complaints fall far behind human issues, as they should. But we're here with a narrow focus. We're here with all the training and the resources to make it happen. This bill simply puts more regulation on top of what we already do. It provides for accountability, training, and a tertiary checkpoint outside of OHS, the governor's office, now puts it in the hands of DPSST, and this is what they do, and this is what they do well. Senate Bill 810 is a different issue. Senate Bill 810 takes the responsibility for animal crimes away from animal control officers and puts it into the most expensive hands of police officers. And it takes away the responsibility and the authority from people who are trained, cost-effective, and dedicated to this particular crime and adds it to the workload of regular police. It's a different issue.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, I mean, we've heard similar series of bills like this over in the House, either last session or the session before, and so I'm really familiar with this. I don't want to get into the debate about the governor's authority to create special agents, so on and so forth like that. I mean, that's a policy decision that we've had historically. In terms of 303, the governor has the power creating special agents, developing continuing education standards and professional development for an authority that the governor already has. I don't have a problem with that. Probably makes good sense. However, we have two hearings here, and now we have 810. This is the issue that I opposed last time. 810 is a significant step. It is much different. And correct me if I'm wrong, and follow up the question that the Senator Whitsitt has, is what we're doing is we're either creating, however the series of bills, we're either putting this into the police officers' hands to do this, or we're now creating the special agents into bona fide full police officers. So I guess what's your druthers here? Because I'm definitely a no vote on 810, no matter how it slices. So
let me give some clarification. My understanding in what I've heard from DPSST The only thing that will happen in the sense of these special agents being identified as police officers will be for the statutes that cover the jurisdiction of DPSST, so they can actually go through the full, not only the full training, but can be commissioned and then kept within that loop for ongoing certification.
Hey, Mr. Chair, that's correct on 303.
Right.
810 looks like a different creature.
That's exactly right. 810, and you'll hear from the opponent to that next panel. Basically, his position has been that the state has unlawfully given power to these commissioned officers to do stuff that they, in the sense of issuing search warrants and doing the searches and stuff like that. So this basically, it is night and day difference.
So I guess my question, Mr. Chair, is I've heard the three panelists in support of 303. What's their position on 810?
Oh, yes, I think no. I could tell you pretty quick. But I'll let Sharon briefly tell us your position.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Boquist, members of the committee, bad idea. I couldn't imagine a giant step backwards in public policy. You know, cities and counties have animal control agencies that are dedicated to animal welfare crimes and of rescuing animals and alleviating human and animal conflicts. This Senate Bill 810 just doesn't affect the Oregon Humane Society. It affects every, it's a broad-reaching bill, and it turns the economics of a community on its head. It takes not just for search warrants, for exigent circumstances. If there's a dog in a hot car, if there's a dog in the backyard that's laying in agony, breathing and in distress, an animal control officer has to stop and then call the police to come to deal with that. Senate Bill 810 mystifies me in how it could add to the value of the state.
All right. Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you all very much for coming forward. I'm going to go ahead and call our next panel up, which is going to be Roger Beyer, Jim Welsh, and Tom Buchholz. And we'll start off with Roger and Jim first, and then Tom. I'm going to give you about 5 minutes. Tom is the proponent for 810. I know he's been working this issue for many, many years. I decided since we had 303 that I would give him an opportunity to spend a little bit of time of putting his issues on the record, and I figured that after this session we will, let's say, address it in a different way. Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. Oregon Dairy Farmers are opposed to Senate Bill 303 as it is drafted in the original version. The dairy farmer's position is that sheriff and state police and city police already have the authority to enforce the wildlife statutes of the state of Oregon, and we believe that authority should remain in the sheriff's offices, specifically in the with the counties where most of these animals reside, not inside the cities, obviously, because there's not any dairies inside the city, unless with the exception of the Eberhardt's Dairy in Portland. But other than that, dairies are in the counties, and the county sheriffs are they are here to enforce the laws of the state of Oregon, all laws, not just animal laws. So we believe the authority to enforce the law should remain in the sheriff's offices. To the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 303, recognizing that the governor already has commissioned humane special agents, already has the authority, we are not opposed to those special agents being more adequately trained if we are going to have them. We are completely neutral on the -1 amendments. If they were to be put into the bill, it would probably improve the system that we have today. Sure. But we still believe that we would prefer all wildlife or all animal laws be enforced by county sheriffs who are elected officials who are accountable to someone, not a private agency. I think that's the biggest concern of the whole humane special agencies, are they are only accountable to a private a private organization. They are not accountable to the public at all once they get commissioned, and that is our concern. So, Mr. Chair, on Senate Bill 810, we are opposed to Senate Bill 810 in its entirety.
All right, thank you. Jim?
Chair Brzezinski and committee members, Jim Welsh, representing Oregon Cattlemen, and we certainly agree with what Roger Beyer has just said. We were here in 2007, and we're helping to try to guide then very similar legislation, and we were certainly advocating for more training, but we also opposed what was going on, as we do in 303 and 810 now, providing more authority, reporting back to a private board when we believe in policy it should still stand within the authority of the county sheriff's department. And we'd like to see it stay there. We agree that the governor has commissioning power here. We understand that. And 303-1 are providing some more training. But we had a bill on the House side, 3348, that authorizes special agents employed by the governor to apply for search warrants and sign judges' name on duplicate original warrants last week. And so, you know, when you accumulate all these, we're just headed right back in the same direction as we see it, as we were in 2007, and it died over on the House side due to, I think, really a policy issue here. And we'd like to see that authority definitely stay under the county sheriffs. We know that it's worked in a tri-county areas, working with humane special agents and also over in Deschutes County. Understand that. I don't want to diminish the relationships they've had with the county officials and everything and the good work they've done. That's not what I'm trying to do here. And I know it was misconstrued in 2007 as a livestock industry, you know, trying to diminish what was going on. We don't. But if there's going to be authority to carry a weapon or authority for warrants or anything else, we want this to come from the DA's office and a police officer, a full police officer. And we don't want a full police officer getting the authority that seems they're headed in 810. That's, you know, if it's going to be a police officer, it needs to be a state policeman or it needs to be a sheriff deputy. Okay.
All right. Thank you. So what I want to do is go ahead and let questions be asked of Roger and Jim at this point, since I know they're not affiliated with Tom. I just want to get them up to the table. So my understanding from gentlemen is that so long as 303 moves forward with the dash ones, then the two organizations are going to be neutral. They're not opposed to the dash ones, but are in fact opposed to the original drafting of 303.
Mr. Chair, that is the position of the Oregon Dairy Farmers, yes.
All right. Thank you. All right. Any questions for...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you all very much for coming forward. Tom, I want to give you about 5 minutes to kind of, I guess, state your case on 8810.
Okay. My name is Tom Buchholz. I'd like to also say on 303 that I was opposed to it as it was originally drafted, because the bill would give the powers of officers that are certified to this bill would give the same powers to officers that are not certified by the state of Oregon. This would be like putting a roof on a house before the foundation and root walls have been built. I'd like to talk about Senate Bill 810, which addresses ORS 167-345. What I have here is a copy of a search warrant applied by Austin Wallace. It says that I am a special agent commissioned by the authority of the governor of the state of Oregon as a peace officer eligible to make requests for a search warrant. This is the Attorney General's search and seizure outline. It states who may apply. ORS 133-5453 provides that application for a search warrant may be made only by a district attorney or by any police officer. A police officer is defined at ORS 133-525 to being a sheriff, a municipal policeman, a member of the state police, investigator of the district attorney's office, an investigator of the criminal justice department. So a perfectly good search warrant signed by a judge and everything becomes a questionable search warrant. I do not see them listed on who can get search warrants. 1973, the legislature overtook an extensive remake of the criminal procedure laws. An accurate summary of Senate Bill 810 would be that the bill corrects an oversight of the 1973 legislature. The bill clarifies who may apply and execute search warrants. The commentary in 1973, ORS 167-860, now ORS 167-345 states, ORS 141-070 would be repealed and the general provisions relating to the issuance of search warrants under Article 5 would apply. Article 5, search warrants commentary, states, only those persons identified with regular police organizations are given the authority to apply for search warrants. Peace officers, under the definition of ORS 161.015, should not be able to obtain a search warrant. The term police officer is defined in the Article 5 as a sheriff, a municipal policeman, or a member of the state police. The 1973 legislature added ORS 167-860 after obtaining a search warrant in a manner of authorized by law, but failed to change peace officer to police officer. This 35-year-old mistake has been not addressed until 2009 Senate Bill 810. In 1987, the Oregon legislature wrote ORS 167-375, Seizure of Fighting Dogs Procedure. This bill states, pursuant to ORS 133-525 to ORS 133-730, a judge may order the seizure of alleged fighting dogs. The 1987 legislature did a much better job in conforming this statute to existing search warrant statutes, 133-525 to 133-703. An example of the current confusion of ORS 167-345 is Jackson County Code 61202. County animal control officers are designated as peace officers, as the term is defined in ORS 161.0154, only as it pertains specifically to the authority provided in ORS 167-345-1 and 2. What Senate Bill 810 does is correctly identify the term police officer under ORS 133-525 is having the authority to apply for search warrants in ORS 167-345. It makes the necessary changes to conform to the existing search warrant laws. Thank you very much. And if you want to read the Attorney General's opinion 707, it will also back up my position.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Buchholz? Tom, thank you for coming forward today. The last person I had scheduled on the witness registration is Philip Kennedy Wong. Philip, do you still need to? Did you want to come forward?
Yes.
Come on.
Thank you.
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, for record, Philip Kennedy Wong, representing Multnomah County. I'm here to state that Multnomah County cannot support Senate Bill 810 as written. Animal control officers in Multnomah County received their authority to perform duties required as peace officers acting under Oregon Revised Statute 133.005(3) by special limited commission, deputy sheriff appointment by the Multnomah County Sheriff. Under this authority, special commission animal control officers are able to enter premises for probable cause of animal abuse, neglect, mistreatment, or abandonment because state law defines them as peace officers. The Multnomah County Code requires animal officers to work with the sheriff's office in obtaining a warrant, and the proposed bill does not change that process. However, in exigent circumstances, as noted by Ms. Harmon, where you do have an animal in distress where immediate action is needed, the animal control officer would have to wait until the sheriff or police arrive. And just to give you a sense of the volume of calls and requests that Multnomah County Animal Control gets, you'll see in the testimony that I submitted, we receive approximately 279 calls on animal abandonment, 150 calls on animals in life-threatening distress, and 704 calls on animal cruelty and neglect, which means roughly 1,133 animals that were in potentially life-threatening circumstances last year, which would then, under 810, would then fall to the responsibility of police officers, which would be great, which would obviously be a burden to local law enforcement.
All right, thank you. Any questions, Philip? Thank you for coming forward.
Thank you
for your testimony. Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 303 or Senate Bill 810? Not seeing anyone coming forward, we're going to close the public hearings on both of those. Mr. Buchholz, you've already had an opportunity to testify. I've just closed the public hearing, and we're now going to move into the rest of our work sessions that we have for today. And, Council, do you want me to just start at the bottom?
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, we're going to go ahead and open up a work session on 658.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. 658 has a -5 amendment. This is the OHSU security guard bill. We have representatives from OHSU if you have questions about the amendment. The -5 amendment allows OHSU to commission special campus security officers that will be known as university police, grants all power and authority of peace officers and police officers, requires training by DPSST at the expense of OHSU, prohibits university police from carrying firearms that are not considered, they're not considered police officers for the purposes of PERS, PEB, or strikes by emergency personnel. States the university is a criminal justice agency and a law enforcement unit. There is no revenue impact on the -5 amendment, and there is a fiscal statement you should have received. And that fiscal statement, I just want to clarify that, it's all OHSU money. It's not state general fund.
All right, but I understand that, but for clarity, since authorization may be necessary, does this need to have a subsequent referral?
I did ask the president's office. I have not received a response on that.
All right, so if we take motions on that.
Oh, the fiscal statement says it's $260,000 basically for 2009, 2011, $450,000 for 2011, 2013, and OHSU will be paying for this. They recognize that this is a cost of business. They're here if you want to ask them questions.
Well, I think the question is, and that's why I was asking Council, whether we had an obligation to do that. The numbers tell me that it will be going down there. It's maybe the appropriate motion that if we're going to move forward with the -5s would be to give a recommendation for a due pass with a request that the President's office determine whether it needs to go to Ways and Means. That way we know it's going to go to the President no matter what, and they have been looking at these very closely. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the -5s in.
Okay.
Right, Mr. Chair, I move the -5s into 658.
Senator Boquist moves the -5s into Senate Bill 658. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, in light of the discussion we just have, and it's my intention that it probably will end up downstairs, I'll make the motion and support it. If the President does send it to the floor, though, I may reconsider my vote on the floor, because I do believe this needs to go to Ways and Means.
I understand. So Senator Boquist moves that we send Senate Bill 658, as amended by the -5s, with a due pass recommendation to the floor, with an understanding that we are requesting the President's office to look at this bill to determine whether or not it needs to go to Ways and Means. I understand that the votes that we take today are just to move the bill through this process, and if for some reason the President's office determines that it does not need to go to Ways and Means, that some members may choose not to support the bill on the floor based on what we have for our fiscal. Does that cover us?
That's correct, for sure. I just believe it needs to go to Ways and Means, but I'll support it.
All right. All right, so any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And at this point, I'm going to put the chair down to carry the bill. Well, I'll tell you what, we're not going to put a carrier on this one, because I think it's...
I prefer that, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
I'm not going to put a carrier on this
Did
one.
Did we take another vote? Didn't we just adopt the -5s?
Yeah, we didn't do a due pass.
We did adopt the
No, we didn't.
No, we
did.
No, we took the fines first.
We did adopt the -5.
Right. Right. We just did it just now.
The second motion?
Yeah.
The second motion was my motion.
Okay.
Got right. I just kind of just restated it for it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So that one is done. All right. Now we're going over to close the work session that we just completed on 658. Open a work session on 786.
Thank Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 786 is the requires employers to accommodate religious practices of employees. This one we had on the agenda yesterday, and we did not have the fiscal statement. Now we do have a dash two. There's no fiscal impact, no revenue impact. The dash two amendment basically just adds the words reasonably or reasonable throughout the bill to accommodation, and also states that it shall be known as the Oregon Workplace Religious Freedom Act. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash two in the 786.
All right, Senator Boquist moves the dash twos in the Senate Bill 786. Any discussion? My understanding is basically what the dash twos are doing is to make certain that the accommodations that are would be required in the bill are reasonable, and that it gives more, I guess, flexibility and interpretation for employers to not be, let's say, in a situation that may not provide for the flexibility that the terminology reasonable will in fact add to the bill. Any other comments? Any objection? So ordered, and take a motion on the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'll move SB 786 with the dash two to the floor with the due pass, then I'll speak to my motion.
All right, Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 786 as amended by the dash twos to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I supported a version of this in the House yesterday, or in the House in my previous life. I have some concerns about reasonable small end, small businesses having to comply, so on and so forth. But I did support this conceptual idea in the House, and so therefore I will support it here, despite my reservations.
All right. And any other comments,
Chair?
Senator Wissett.
I share Senator Boquist's concerns, and perhaps a little more deeply. This does, is my understanding, Council, that this starts with the first employee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Wissett, it does start with one employee, unlike the disability law we heard before. This is 659A, and it starts with one employee.
Any other questions, comments? All right. We have a motion before us to move 786 as amended with the dash twos to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection?
I'm going to object at this time.
All right. Senator Wissett objects at this time, reserving the right to change his vote at a later time. Any others? With that, so ordered. And I'm going to go ahead and put Senator Nelson as the carrier, since he was one of the co-chief sponsors, and the chair will be a backup if Senator Nelson does not wish to carry the bill to the floor. And we'll close the work session on 786, and we'll open up a work session. Work session on Senate Bill 928.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 928 requires employers to make reasonable safety accommodations for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. We had a dash two amendment, and the dash two amendment clarifies the list of reasonable safety accommodations may include, but is not limited to, the items listed, and it adds unpaid before leave to clarify that is unpaid leave we're talking about as an accommodation. This has no revenue impact. We just received a dash two. It's got a minimal fiscal impact, and it's ready to move. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Chair would entertain a motion regarding the dash twos.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash twos while I'm looking through it.
All right. Okay, I'm going to go slow here.
Okay.
Senator Boquist moves the dash twos into Senate Bill 928. Is there any discussion? And we're going to leave it open because since we have just received these.
You go ahead and go forward, Mr. Chair.
All right. And at this point, any objection to the motion to adopt the dash twos? So ordered. And
I'm just behind her, Mr. Chair. Coming through my notes.
Okay. Basically, what my understanding the dash twos are doing is it's basically, again, giving some flexibility here. Remember, when we had this before us, there was some concern as to what would be required.
Right.
And I know the chair made some comments during the testimony that we should add a word, something like could, on line 7 to make certain that these were not mandates. And my understanding is they came back with include, deleting the word includes, and may include, but not limited to.
I got it. Yep.
Chair, I just want to clarify, Mr. Chair, that my notes indicate that I think, believe it was Senator Boquist had a question about whether it was paid leave, and somebody from Boley indicated it was not, so the Dash 2 amendment also adds unpaid leave on line 8. So
we'll cut up, Mr. Chair.
All right.
And the Dash 2, move the Dash, the 928 with the Dash 2 to the floor with two passes.
All right, Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 928 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Senator Chair, I'm still struggling with this one as well. It's a it's a well-meaning bill. I have no question about that. I'm really concerned that, again, for small businesses with only an employee or two, that I can see if you have one employee and that particular person is a devout Seventh-day Adventist, then the employer is going to be working Saturday if you're staying open. You know, I mean, it's one of those situations. I think I'll oppose it at this time. I may change my vote, but I want to talk more to the small business people.
Okay. I think that's fair. My interpretation of this is if you actually had that type of situation, that the employer would not be required to accommodate if that's small. Because the way the bill is set up, it actually gives kind of a out for undue hardship of the operation of the business, and it would seem to me that a compelling case could be made, but I understand.
But Boley would make that decision, and there's also a civil course of action in addition to Boley.
Okay.
Which is quite a club, actually, if you're a small businessman.
All right.
And Mr. Chair, just to clarify, this particular bill just deals with the victims of domestic violence or assault or stalking, not the religious accommodation.
Yes. Yeah, I understand.
Same situation. And for the record, on this bill and the previous, I had the same discussion on reasonable, and the conclusion was that reasonable gets closer to the 6 employees. Whether that's true or false, we may be revisiting this issue again.
Okay. All right. Understand that Senator Wissett has an objection at this point. Is there anyone else objects to the bill going forward? If not, if the record will reflect that Senator Wissett is objecting at this time, reserving the right to change his position between now and floor. With that, it's ordered. I'll have Senator Bonamici be the carrier. And I do want to put on the record regarding Senate Bill 303, which we just closed the work session on, that it's going to be carried over. And, Council, did you want it for Monday or Friday?
I think that we're going to need it till Monday, knowing how fiscal is going.
All right, so Senate Bill 303 work session will be continued and carried over until Monday, April 27th. All right, and I believe that takes care of all of our work for today.
I believe so.
All right, thank you, committee members, and we got a lot of work done in just under an hour.
Wow.
Thank you.